as mentioned quite a number of times, that the Rosh was a Talmud Choviv, a very close and beloved Talmud of the Rebbe of all of Chachmei Ashkenaz, and that was the Maram of Rotenburg. Maram of Rotenburg actually was the last of the Balei Tosfos of Ashkenaz. And the yeshiva of the Rosh really influenced also the learning way far the yeshivas in France, and also the yeshivas, as we find in other mekayimis as well. Very strong influence of the yeshiva of the Rosh in Ashkenaz, which was in Germany. From all the Talmidim, that the many Talmidim that the Maram Rotenberg had, the Maram Rotenberg sort of like chose him. That he, if there's going to be a successor or a Mamalamokim, the Maram Rotenberg chooses the Rosh above all the Talmidim. You have to realize Maram Rotenberg, being one of the Balei Tosfos, and we're talking about Rishonim, all of them Talmidim, they were all great, should be great, each one of those Talmidim. And the Rosh towers above them in the sense that the Maram Rotenberg sort of like gives over the authority in the future for the Rosh, based upon all the different milas that the Rosh had. It was not just one area. It was, of course, his genius, his goydis b'toyre, it was his hasmode, it was his sitkis, his yirshimayim, it was his midos, his character, and so on and so forth. Interesting also is that the Rosh grew so high in the eyes of his Rebbe, the Maram Rotenberg, that we find that in the Chuvis Maharam Bar Boruch, that's the name of the Chuvis Maharam Bar Boruch, Maharam Bar Boruch, Rabbeinu Meir Bar Boruch, we find there in Shar Beis, Isimakufa and Dalit, that it's Hafle Vefela, that the Maram Rotenberg refers to the Rosh, he writes to him, Moiri Harav Osher Sheyichia. He was his Rebbe. Maram Rotenberg was the Rebbe of the Rosh. Very rare, if ever, do you see that a Rebbe himself, okay, you Mechabed a Talmud, but in a sense, or maybe make him, consider him like an equal, but to have that kind of his batlas, that kind of his batlas, that the Maram Rotenberg would write on the Rosh, the Loshen Moiri Harav Osher Sheyichia. In addition to that, as he calls him Moiri, it is obvious that the Rosh was considered to be, as we say, one of the greatest in the eyes of his Rebbe. Maram Rotenberg, his psak actually reigned supreme all over Germany. And if he refers to the Rosh as Moiri, and you can be sure this was the great Anivis, that's what it was. Ram Rotenberg was as great as we was, as we know, and did not have to be a Talmud of the Rosh in any way, but nevertheless, he writes Moiri regarding the Rosh. So it's not only that he appreciated the godless, the genius, and the Torah of the Rosh, but he also, in addition to that, he considered the Rosh to be a tremendous tzaddik, which of course all the Rishonim were. But in talking about Rishonim within their peers, you know, they're so great themselves, so when one considers the other to be a tzaddik, now you have to realize what that means in the eyes of Rishonim, that we find, as a matter of fact, that the Rosh writes in a particular letter, and once we quoted the Loshen actually, the Maram Rotenberg actually writes in a particular letter, and he writes as follows. His last week he says, I was sort of like in bed for 8 days. This is the Loshen, this is how he writes, the Maram Rotenberg. He said, the last week, he says, I was like in bed. The previous week, I was in bed for something like 8 days. He said, because of a sickness that's called Duluri. That's what he calls it. A sickness called Duluri, which I contracted that disease, writes the Maram Rotenberg, from drinking some sort of a bad drink or some sort of a spoiled drink of sorts. It had this type of effect on me. That partially, he says, I was bedridden, he says, for many, many days. And he says, now he says, Baruch Hashem, he says, I feel better. And therefore, now I think I want to still, he says, ask you, he writes to the Rosh, he says, I beseech you, and he writes the following Loshen, V'ta'adhir ba'adi, he says, please be mispalel on my behalf. Ram Rotenberg writes to the Rosh, please be mispalel on my behalf, umuvtuchani b'tfiloscho, I have bitochen and certainty in your tefillah, in your pure tefillah, shetas the peiros or peiros peiros, that the tefillah that you are going to be inspired on my behalf will have peiros and peiros peiros. Here again, you see, people send a kvittel to a rebbe, so on and so forth. Others to be inspired for them. You see, Maram Rotenberg, right? That's the Rosh. As much as his Talmud, that he should be, in fact, he should be inspired for him. One of the, I say, colleagues, we could say, of the Rosh, was one of the other great Rishonim. and that is the Mordechai. Mordechai is printed in every edition in the Talmud Bavli, in the Vilna Shas, which now certainly the Shasin have been improved much, much more with all the additional Meforshim, is no end. Every time there was a new Shas, or they add more stuff to it in the back. But in any case, the Mordechai is printed as like as an appendage to the Rif. Right behind the Rif, you'll find the Mordechai. Mordechai basically is a compilation of halachis and various opinions of many of the Gedolei Yisrael before him. As a matter of fact, many opinions of Rishoyin would never have been known if not for the fact it was recorded by the Mordechai. Mordechai's name was Rabbeinu Mordechai ben Hillel. He was a colleague of the Rosh, both Talmidim in the same yeshiva. Both Talmidim in the same yeshiva, being Talmidim of the Maram Rothenberg. And it is from the Maram Rothenberg where the Rosh took his own Derech HaLimud. You know, that's very special analytical style, which is the style of the Balatosis, which this all come, going start from Rama Rothenberg and so on. The Rush took it basically from his Rebbe, Rama Rothenberg. And as we already once mentioned, that the Chidot told us that the Tosis of Masechtas Yuma, in fact, is the Rama Rothenberg. It's not mentioned. But if you open up Masechtas Yuma and you learn Tosis, Tosis is always on the left side, you have Rashi on the right side, and you have Tosis on the left side. Well, Tosis is Tosis, you know. But Masechtas Yuma, the Tosis, as you can see, if you learn the Tosis on Yuma, you'll see that the Lush and the Tosis Yuma is different. Someone who's a little bit used to learning Tosis will recognize that the Loshon is not the same type of language. There are differences in terms of some personal references and so on and so forth that you don't usually find in regular Tosis. And in any case, the Chidot tells us, was the big maven, and the Chidot tells us this was the Bala Tosis on Yuma, is basically is the Maram Rothenberg. So the Rosh was considered to be like the greatest Bal Svara. The Rosh was considered to be the greatest Bal Svara, the most logical, and so on of all of them. And together, of course, with his Gadlus B'Torah and his Yerushalayim and so on, the Maram Rothenberg, we said, designated him that he's going to be, that in fact, that he's going to be his Ma'al HaMokim. And in fact, that became true. That hope. Many times, you know, you have hopes for a Talmud, but you become disappointed. They just don't materialize. Remember in yeshiva as well, and many of you can also remember, in yeshiva there are all different type of bokhrim. Some bokhrim seem to be, let's call them a masuyan, and you had a lot of hopes for him that, you know, that someday he really is going to amount to something very great. And there were others that, let's say, they were average. Yeah, they were learning, good learners, let's say, but they're average and so on. And there is no particular hopes that they're going to really come out or they're going to emerge and become outstanding. And yet you find that those that you thought the great Mitzionim, they just didn't become the great Mitzionim once they left the yeshiva world. Whatever it is, could be many, many reasons. Could be sometimes the wife was not supportive. Could be sometimes they just got drawn into the business world and so on and so forth, just took them someplace else. They got attracted to something else. And then you had the others, maybe were not the biggest Balkishrim, but it was Gevalei Yemasim. He had a love for learning. Right? And he had the discipline just to keep at it, and so on and so forth. So they really grew up. Many Gedolei Yisrael, as we say, La Davke, the Gedolei Yisrael that we have were always the greatest Balakishim. Yeah, they had Lamailas. Yeah, they were smart, they were bright, but not necessarily brighter than Davka being Davka the top. And yet they did amount to be the greatest. They had a lot of Sati Dishmaya due to the other Milas they had as well. Because there was the Yerushimayim, and they had the Tzitkis, and so on. And when they davened, you can be sure they also davened to have the Schus of Sati Dishmaya, that they should be able to have a Tzlocha learning. Tefillah is always a very important part, not only to learn, but also the Chelikat Tefillah Shaboy. We say in the davening, we ask Kodesh Baruch Hu, Choneinu Mitcho, please, right, be gracious and favor us by giving us das and so on. So we see that's inserted in the field. Three times a day we say that. We say in the davening of Havarabba, V'hoi Neinu B'sayu Secho, which means to say that we need to say Atish Shmai, because we should enlighten our eyes. What do you mean? Be a masmid. That's a big Balkishrim. Everybody has to say it. Could be the God Lador has to also be Mispal, has to say V'hoi Neinu B'sayu Secho and so on. I believe he once may have mentioned that the Marsham, Poisek Hador, Masham writes in a place. The world is not so familiar that the Masham being that great Poisek, being a halachist, that he was very much in Mekushet to the world of Hasidus, very strong. Masham was very much connected to the world of Hasidus, and brings down B'Shem Rebbe Reb Shmelke of Nicholsburg, who was the brother of the Afloh, that he said that Rebbe Reb Shmelke said that in a day, if he did not say Havarabba with Kavona, that day he was not able to be Mechadish Echidush Emes in Torah. Now I can imagine when Rabbi Shmelke says he didn't daven with Kavona, it's Lefi Yerkoi. You can be sure he always davened with Kavona. But Kavona again is also Madregis. Somebody's not Kavona is somebody else's Gevaldige Kavona, and so on and so forth. It's what they used to say is, we know, we came to Tashlich. They say from the Rav Shesaruv, and others say from different Rebbes, comes to Tashlich. So everybody goes to Tashlich. We're going to Tashlich. You're throwing out your Averis. So it was a tashla, so it was a particular chaser. He came with a pail. He started drawing water. The Rebbe said, "What's that?" He said, "Rebbe, you're throwing your avers for me are mitzvahs. I'm picking them up. You're throwing into the river all those avers." He said, "Halavai, you should have your avers. Your avers are like my mitzvahs." He says, "That's the madrega." So it's everything is a relative situation, and so this was the rush. Of course, the rush was the Yamsha Shloime, which is the mashal. Mashal, let me tell you this in the translation what the Mashal writes this. He writes this in the Hadoma to Bavi Kama. He says, regarding the Maram Rottenberg, Ish Onov V'Tohor, in addition to being the great Goyen that he was, the great Paisik that he was, the great Marbis Teire, Zerishin, Balataisis. But he writes it was Ish Onov. Well, you can see it. Imagine a Rebbe writes on a Talmud, as we mentioned before. He writes Moiri, Harav, Osher. He writes on his Talmud, Moiri, my Rebbe. Ram Rottenberg, don't question about it, he was a great honor. And the Marshal makes reference to that. He says, Ish Onov, he says, She'ein ba'achreinim kamoyu. We don't have in our later generations, we have no one like him, he says. And he points out that the Maram Rottenberg, he says, was Zoyche, he says, to put up a Talmud who is Kemat Mamala Mekoymoy. Interesting lesson of the Marshal. That the Rosh is Kemat Mamala Mekoymoy. But he meant to say close enough. He's a worthy successor of the Maram Rottenberg. But you write, and the way he titles him, Moronov Rabbono Rabbeinu Osher. So writes the Mashal. If anybody's a little bit familiar with the Mashal, Mashal is a very critical person. Very critical. And by the way, he does not shy away from voicing an opinion, even sometimes a Rishonim, even against Rishonim. So he really is, as we say, he's Makayim like Lesoguru Mipneish. Nothing fears him. Nothing makes him move step away. If he feels he has something to say. And certainly his peers, you can be sure, he didn't pay them any, there is no homage if he felt that intellectually that there's something to disagree about. That's why you have continuously, if you learn Gemara Shitoises, you go to the Marshal and you see Marshal, continuously that they argue. Different of opinion. Marshal says this, and the Marshal says different, or vice versa, and so on and so forth. But when it comes that we see to the Rosh, a tremendous extra respect that the Marshal had mentioning the Rosh. So later on, the Rosh basically established his own yeshiva. But yeah, he was a Talmud of the Maram Rottenberg, but ultimately later, so the Rosh established his own yeshiva in Germany, and had Talmidim from coming all over. As we already pointed out, literally from all over, Talmidim came, and the Rosh was also Zoyche to Toirik Dul B'Mokem Echot, that he was quite comfortable in Parnosa, which was not always true for Rishonim. As a matter of fact, do we need anybody greater than Rashi? Rashi was an Oni Vevian, how very hard to believe. Rashi lived in abject poverty. Rashi writes himself in one of the Mekoymis, there's writings and letters from Rashi also, where you get a little bit of a glimpse, again, as I always say, on the personality, besides the Torah. Somebody would really like to know something about Rashi. So, who can tell you about Rashi's personal, except Rashi himself? And he says, in one place, he says, I'm not sure where my tomorrow's bread is coming from. Can you imagine such a thing, such a God l'ador, someone like Rashi? But the Chiddush is that not only that, he was saying he lived in such dire straits, but does not hinder. Does it stop? You can imagine somebody with having such nisyonis, you know, in Parnos and so on, would block his train of thought, would not have the gedul, would not have the patience to be able to dedicate himself, right, in this voluminous way, in this it's extraordinary. As we say, there's no such thing. If you ever see a chumash that's ever printed without Rashi, it's a halba chumash. So it's not a chumash. What do you mean? Chumash of Kodesh Baruch Hu gave it a chumash. Rashi is Rashi. No, a chumash without Rashi, it's not a chumash. What kind of chumash is that? Yeah, Rashi. That's what Rashi was zoichet to. Rav Shach once said, he said, you know, all the various girls' schools, you know, that were instituted, finally, you know, years ago there was no such thing as girls' school, but we know Kesar Shneer or whatever. Anyway, started the whole movement of girls' schools. So Rav Shach says that it's Kedai, said there should be thousands of Beis Yaakovs, whatever name you want to call them, thousands of girls' schools, if only to produce one mother that produced a Rashi, he says. Is it worth it? What would the world, hundreds of years, right, since Rashi, right, almost going back 900 years since Rashi, where would the Torah world be without Rashi? So Rashi is a problem. The mother of Rashi is responsible, right, for the Torah that millions and millions of Jews have been learning from then till now, and till Bisa Mashiach, and who knows, forever, Mestama also. Which is, this is the Torah of Rashi. Just one mother is responsible for that. No, so how do you know which school is going to produce that? I don't know. So it's Kedai, you say, give thousands of girls' schools. schools, to produce one mother that's going to be able to produce, so even just one Rashi. That's all they did. They did much more, right? But that's all would have been. Would have all been Kedai. So Mamela, so the Rosh, by the way, what was the Parnosa? The idea was that very common those days was money lending. Money lending was a common thing. By the way, that was one of the things, because Jews were restricted in many areas, whether it was in Venice or other Mekleimus, Jews were restricted to open their own businesses, simply because they didn't want Jews to go into competition with the Gentile neighbors. And therefore, there was a lot of restrictions in terms of what type of business or what thing Jews can go into, what they can enter and what they cannot. Everything was with limitation. Money lending, yeah, was something that they did. And the Rosh, as a matter of fact, writes in one of the places. It's actually in the Piskei Rosh Moed Kotan. He writes it. Perek Aleph Simcha Dali writes, I allowed, he says, Bebesi lahalvois lenochrim, shiragilim tomid behalvois bebesi. Seems it was a common thing, so is the Rosh, that Goyim would come for halvois. First of all, imagine Goyim having the schus to see the Rosh and come to leave with the Rosh. Can you imagine such a thing? But that's a big name. So this was basically just a little bit. The Rosh just should mention that the tragedy is always filled with tragedy. Always the Jewish, you see, things have a little bit of calm, right? And then there's always a situation, just wait a few years, unfortunately, then things turn back. And then you have the Tsaris and you have the pogroms and all the situations. And then when it turns calm again, you even begin to think that this is the way it's always going to be. And yet again, the tables turn. Here you have the colleague of the Rosh, who is the Mordechai, Rabbeinu Mordechai ben Hillel, right? Comes, which was called known the Rindfleisch massacres, and the Mordechai is killed and murdered, Al Kiddush Hashem, him and his wife and five children. Can you imagine that? The God Lador, the Mordechai, whose Torah we learned today, and so on, the colleague of the Rosh, and this was the fate, and but nevertheless, as we see, we survived, but not only that, we produced these great people that no other nation are able to produce even something close. So we take a look at my voice. I hear a little bit at the Rosh here in the Orchis Chaim. We go here to Dav Chof, page Chof, Lamed Beis. Page Chof, Lamed Beis. Page Chof, Lamed Beis. So here the Rosh says the following. The Rosh says, Zechay Yoim HaMoves Tomit. A person thinks he's going to live forever. Big mistake. A person has to make use of each and every day. No one knows when his time comes. Zechay Yoim HaMoves Tomit. A person should always be mindful of the Yoim HaMoves, that is going to be a day that he's going to live this world. As far as you know, it could be today, it could be tomorrow, it could be any day. And the Rosh tells us, as a result, if a person is mindful, if a person lives with the awareness that there is a Yoim HaMoves, and by the way, as you see right over here, in the bottom of the beer of Ramosha Sternberg, Luk Lamed Beis, you see right in the bottom, Zechoy Yoim HaMoves Tomit means, because when that day comes, you're going to have to stand before the heavenly court. And you have to give Din V'Cheshvan. Haynu She'oz Yidrishu Memenu Losei Din V'Cheshvan. So remember, there's going to come a time like that. So therefore, you have to prepare for that day. You can't live a life of Hefkeris, because you realize that there's going to open the file, and they can open the file, and everything is going to be recorded there. So remember the Yoim HaMoves. Remember that. And you see in the bottom, Zechoy Yoim HaMoves told me even further, because the truth is, remembering the Yoim HaMoves also has many, right, has many benefits to that. One of the main things is the Gemara tells us we all have challenges with our Yetzer Hara. The Gemara says one of the ways to combat the Yetzer Hara, if a person remembers that he's not going to live forever. And you say to yourself, he says, I better make sure that the time that I spend on this world, I'm going to listen to the Yetzer Hara and therefore ruin eternity for myself. Because whatever I do here determines now forever. So, but the Gemara gives us three eitzes against, to remember the Yom HaMisa is the last one. And that was the last piece of advice, the last maneuver, right, or the last tool. What are the first two? There are three. So let's take a look over here. Zechoy Yoim HaMoves Tomit. So we see here, Chiddishu. It seems it's a Chiddish what the Rosh is saying, Shitzorich Lizkor Tomit. Because from the Gemara it seems that Yoim HaMisa is not the first choice that one should have. Let's take a look. Dehine b'mesecht is Brochus. So Brochus, the Gemara says on Daf Hei, the Gemara says there, Sheyargiz Yetzer Toiv Al Yetzer Hora. A person should always agitate the Yetzer Hara, right? Through the Yetzer Toiv. The Yetzer Toiv should always, In other words, there's never time of peace. You realize that 24/7, you have to realize that you're at war with the Yetzer Hara. There's the Mishalm of the Chofetz Chaim. Chofetz Chaim pointed out, Yetzer Hara is an arch enemy. And a person has to really, first of all, you have to really review that and really confirm that in your mind. Because you have to recognize who your friends are, who your enemies are. And the Yetzer Hara, basically, who leads you down a path of the world of enjoyment, right? And to pursue all the desires of Olam Hazeh, so to the body it feels good. But many things feel good to the body and they're destructive. Even the physical world, forget about that. People like to smoke, it feels good, it's destructive. People maybe like to eat things that they shouldn't be eating, feels good, tastes good, it's destructive. Now, how much more so the Yetzer Hara takes you, right, and entices you to practices that destruct, feels good. You think he's your friend, right? He's giving you all these good exits. Go over here, go over, do this, do that. All things to go over. It's a friend. He's pursuing me, he's pushing me to do things that make me feel good. It's poison. Poison can be made to taste good also, by the way, right? If you sugarcoat it, put some little chocolate around it, even cyanide, you won't know until you swallow it. The Chas V'Shalom, you find what it is. So a lot of things taste good, and that's what the Yetzer Hara is, an arch enemy. He makes you believe that tastes good is good, and that's a big mistake. The Alshul Kodesh says there's something called Orev and something called Moil. Orev means it tastes good, but not necessarily it is good. Moil means it's beneficial, it's good, doesn't have to taste good. For example, bitter medicine. It's good. It's a refuah. It doesn't taste good, but it's good. That in essence, that's what the real good is. Not everything that tastes good may be bitter. Right? Bitter pill to swallow, as they say, right? But you need that pill. Very beneficial. So what determines what's good or bad is not what tastes good or what feels good. Just the opposite. Many, many things that really feel good are totally bad and destructive. People addicted to drugs. Feels gewaldig for them, right? So man, when it gives them all these, at the end of the day, is destructive. And you know, people have lost their lives. Someone had told me that actually a doctor, who basically many times he's in the emergency room as well, even though that's not his main position, but he sees, and there was a situation even from young people who have came to emergency room, and some did not make it. So the shmu out there goes, he had some sort of a heart attack, he had some sort of a stroke or something. He said, no, he said it was drugs, but it's embarrassing to say, because this person was he's a known person, meaning people knew the family of that person, and it was drugs. So how much more destructive can it be? It tasted good, that's why the person did it. Become addicted to it, hard to stop, and so on and so forth. So the Gemara tells us as follows. So therefore, the Chofetz Chaim says that, you know, usually is like the following. He says, a person, you have an enemy, and you recognize the enemy. So sometimes, you know, the enemy is not attacking, so you're comfortable, you sit back. He said, the Yetzer Hara, he says, is always on the attack. There's never a time that you can sit back and say, okay, now there's a period of calm. There's no such thing. The Yetzer Hara is out there, and if it appears calm, he says, you have to look to the right and to the left to figure, what is he up to? You know, you have to be suspicious, says the Chofetz Chaim, because the Yetzer Hara is always out to get, and not only that, he always devises new plans. If you figured out how to get him, you figured out how to overpower him in one area, he's going to figure out a new area. And I mean, he's continuously inventing new things, and therefore, sometimes we're clearly not aware of it. So what appears many times to be, it's quite calm, no, he's not making me do anything, and so on and so forth, you don't realize he's working behind the scenes. At least he is sort of, he's creating a web, and he's in order to be able to trap you. So this is the person that's why the Gemara says, the Gemara's Lashon really is, he doesn't quote the word Le'oilam. The Gemara's Lashon Kedah Chofetz Chaim says, Le'oilam Yargiz Yetzer Toiv Al Yetzer Hara. Le'oilam means always. Lo'ilam. Always. There's never a time that you say to yourself, okay, the Yetzer Hara today is, it's a rest. The Yetzer Hara is giving me a day off. There's no such thing. Not a day off, he's not giving you a moment off. He's not off at all at any time. He's always on call doing what he was created to do. So therefore, a person should always see to it that the Yetzer Toiv overpowers the Yetzer Hara. No, but let's say it doesn't work. The Gemara says, Yasek B'Toira. Let him learn. You can learn Torah. The Torah is going to help you overpower the Yetzer Hara. And if that doesn't work, the Gemara says, Yikra Krishma. Then say Krishma. Because when we say Krishma, what's Krishma? Krishma means that a person declares, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, that I am subservient to Kodesh Baruch Hu, which means that I'm not going to let the Yetzer Hara get into the way. But let's say you've tried that, it doesn't work either. So the Gemara says, Yaskilo Yema Misa. Ah, that's going to work. If a person really, I'm talking about seriously, not a person really serious, yes, there's going to come a time I have to leave this world. If you're going to contemplate it in the proper way, and you know there's a Sefer Shevet Musar, we once mentioned it quite a few times in the Chumash here during Shabbos, the Shevet Musar, Rabbi Baal Mekubal, lived a few hundred years ago in Izmir, in Turkey. So as he mentioned the following, so he mentions, he says, don't you ask all your mamisa means? Now, simple translation means, listen to that, it's very, quite dramatic. Yaskal Mimisa means that a person should recognize, he should remember, there'll come a time that he leaves this world, which means life is not forever. Okay. He said, it means much more than that. Yaskal Mimisa means, don't you should imagine? It says, I'm always, we should put a sign, not for anybody under 13 to listen to this. You don't have to be over 13. So, you should imagine, Yaskal Mimisa, that in fact you left this world. And imagine, he says, that you're in a coffin and your wife is standing there and your children are there and your family, and you hear all the crying and you hear all the tsar and all the friends and all the relatives, in order to realize everything that goes around with it. Yaskal Mimisa, you want, it becomes an emotional experience, the Yaskal Mimisa, not just a fleeting thought, but something really an emotional experience. If you really think about that, oh, this is real, and that's going to help you combat the Yetzer Hara. But the Gemara says that Eitzah should be left for last. First try Torah. First try Kriya Shema. So how come the Rosh says Yaskir or Zechor Yom HaMavis Tomid? Always use the Eitzah of Yom HaMavis. From the Gemara appears Yom HaMavis was, that's the final one. If the others didn't work, then you try that. So you know what he says? So says he, the question is, he says, from the Gemara's Mashma, that's the Eitzah Bachreino. Vilu Kan Kosev Rabbein, when here the Rosh writes, Shitzorich Liskoi Tomid, that he should always remember that. Vitzorich Leimar, so what do we have to say? She'onu Kvar Yoravnu Harbe Moid, we have Yoridis Adoiris. Ba'onu Tzvichin Tomid Le Eitzas, to the Eitzah of Yom Amise. Now as the Gemara says, used to be a time where the Gemara says, try Torah might help you. Maybe Krishna might help you. But you see from the Gemara, the other two don't. Yom HaMisa seems to be something that's more guaranteed, right? We'll see about that soon. But in any case, that's a simple cheshbon, the way the Gemara, following the Gemara. So it appeared that in our time today, already in the Rosh's time maybe, and certainly the Rosh was not just talking for his time, he was talking for today, Tov Shinan Gimel, we're learning the Sefer. It's as relevant today as it ever was. And Amela, Yom HaMisa, maybe we have to always use and rely and come down to that. I think that was the more powerful, the final one. If the Torah doesn't work, Krishna doesn't work, this one works, Yom HaMisa works. We're in a matzav of Yerida, that this is what we need. We need the Eitzah of Yom HaMisa. So, let's go back to the Rosh, let's go back to Lamed Beis in the middle, to the middle text, to the text on top. Let's go back. So the Rosh says, Zocher Yom HaMavis Tomid. Always remember the Yom HaMavis. V'tzeidol Aderech Ochein. And prepare Tzedol Aderech, when a person goes on a trip. Well, you prepare some food, right? Who knows where you're going to find food? It's called Tzedol Aderech. So, what do people do? Today people, even some people, even when they go on a plane, and they have ordered kosher food, they still bring it in the suitcase, just in case it doesn't come. Right? And Azoy Bazot, right? In case the food doesn't come, or maybe it doesn't, they missed me sometimes. They can't. So anyway, so people at Tzedol Aderech, they go on the way, they want to make sure there's something to eat. What about Tzedol Aderech for the next world? You're traveling. In other words, when we're living here for 80, 90 years on this world, hopefully, till 120, you're really passing through. That's all you're doing. It's a trip. Life on this world, you're not stationary here. You're passing through time. That's what's happening. To the ultimate destination. Well, if you're traveling, you need food. You need Tzedol Aderech. What's the Tzedol Aderech? In the next world, Rabbi Isaiah, it's not bagels and cheese or whatever it is. Next world is something else. Tzedol Aderech. So you have to prepare the Tzedol Aderech. You have to have all the Torah mitzvahs that you're able. All the Torah mitzvahs that you are able to credit, that you're able to get, that you're able to bring about. That is really what counts. That's the currency in the next world. Nothing else. So, Mele, the Sim Bein Enecho Shnei Eile Tomid. The Rosh says, always have these two things in front of you. Which two things? Yom HaMisa, and it's incumbent for Tzedol Aderech. Prepare yourself, Tzedol Aderech. And he says, V'yihu Muzumonim Lecho L'Yom HaPirid. When the time comes to depart, right, then you're going to have with what to go. You're going to have something in your hand. You're going to have something to take you along to the day of your departure when the time comes. And then the Rosh says, Umitoscho bedimo tamse. The Rosh says that your bed should be soaked with tears. The Rosh is a very, as you can see, the Rosh is a very proponent of the chashivas. was very much of the chashivas, what it means, tears. You say the tears of a Jewish mother, you know, always talking about, it's not just the tears of a Jewish mother, but bechlau, the idea of tears. Umetoscha bedima tamse. If you take a look over here in the bottom, under the, from Ramosha Sternbuch, if you take a look here, there's a few lines. Umetoscha bedima tamse. You see the paragraph there? Mevoya, what you see from the Rosh. So he says, what are the tears about? You should be crying. What should you be crying about all the time? So he says, Yibkel Chatov, a person who should cry on his Averis, Ubezehu Morid Chujbune. And thereby he becomes, right? He becomes basically, he becomes on target with the Cheshbinus. He keeps Cheshbun. Vadvorim Choydrim Lalev, he says, the words of the Rosh, they penetrate the heart. The Rosh says, Shitzorech Bidemois Lahamsoy Samite. You should soak the bed with tears, because the word tamse means hayna ad shamito retuva b'demois, until the bed actually is wet from tears. You might remember when you say tachnan, right? You put your hand in tachnan. What does David HaMelech say? Rachum v'chanan, right? Tosi b'demosi arsev, arsev b'demois. He mentions it. David HaMelech also talks about that. So just interesting thing. There is a sefer called Leket Rishimois. Leket Rishimois is something that they put together a little bit of the Shmusen from Rav Nachman Vachtfeigel, the Mashgiach of Lakewood. Zechonel Brocha. So he brings there, first of all, he says, very interesting. He says, you take a look, and the Gemara talks about the Shara Demois Loin and Alu. The Gemara says in Brocha Daflamet Beis that even if sometimes if the gates in Shemayim are closed, it could be a time of Exera, whatever the situation is. If the gates of Shemayim are closed, the Gemara says, the Shara Demois Loin and Alu. The gates of tears, in other words, if there are tears, it breaks open. You know, tears are sort of like, it's like a bulldozer. That for every reason, if somehow there's a gzeira, chas v'sholom, looming upon the head of someone, or on a tzibur, but tears have the ability to break through. Shara Demois, the gates of Demois, the gates of tears, Loin and Alu. That's something that penetrates, that in other words, all barriers. If there's any single thing that penetrates and breaks all barriers, is the power of tears. Many years ago, one of the Mashgiach mentioned was a Talmud of Rav Gifter. And Rav Gifter, of course, the Rosh Yeshiva of Telz, Rav Gifter pointed out and says, listen, I want you to hear, he said. He says, remember when Yaakovino goes and he preempts Esav, in order to be able to receive or extract the brachas from Yitzchak. And ultimately what happens when Esav comes back, Esav was not aware of that. Esav comes back, remembers part of the promise to him. He says, bring me the food and I'll give you bracha, I'll bestow bracha upon you. Esav doesn't realize that his brother Yaakov is there before him. He preceded him. Esav comes in, and Esav comes and says, Tata, give me a bracha, right? He says, give me a bracha. What does Yitzchak say? Yitzchak says, I have no bracha to give you. Yitzchak said, I have no bracha. It was given. Lashon of the pasuk is, Ulecha, to you, Eifoi, Ma'e Esabini, what can I do? In other words, Yitzchak Avinu felt himself, even though he promised, he was not able to keep his promise. Because the bracha was taken, the bracha was given. He did not realize it. He thought it was Esau. But the fact is, Yaakov Avinu took the brachas. So Yitzchak says, I have no bracha to give you. I've given them away. If I give something away, I can't give it to two people. It's gone. It's no more. I gave it away. What's the Pesach say later on? Later on we find that in fact, Yisro does give him a bracha. He does give him a bracha. He does give him a bracha. Vitul cholikim. He goes, as a matter of fact, the brachas that he gives Yitzchak, gives Esav, seem to be also of a Yitin Chol. Seem quite familiar, but if you look through, there's nothing. There's quite a number of differences. And go look in the Medrash, look in Chazal, you see the differences between the bracha that Yitzchak gave Yaakov. On the surface, it appears to be the same. Some of the words are quite similar, quite similar. But the question is, what happened? Yitzchak said, a moment ago, Yitzchak said, I have no bracha to give you. Where all of a sudden did he have a bracha? And I'll give the point out, because the Pesach says, When Esav heard that he has no bracha, his father will not give a bracha. Vayisav Esav koilei vayev. Yes, Esav, right? Esav, this macho, this Esav, this big ratzeach, this gibber. He breaks down and cries like a baby. Torah describes Vayisav Esav koilei vayev. Said Rav Gifter, that koyach of crying of Esav created a new wellspring of bracha, a new source of bracha that never existed before. That's the power of tears. So now imagine. If the cry of a Rosha like Esav has such a power, can you imagine the cry of a Yid? Yidin. come up to Kodesh Baruch Hu, and you really, you pour out your heart to Kodesh Baruch Hu, how much a person is really so able to achieve, how much he is able to accomplish. Matter of fact, Chazal say that it's because of those tears of Esav that they were able to accomplish so much in his favor, that for thousands of years we find that Esav ruled Rome, Edom, you know, all this. We find that Esav ruled over Yisrael, over the Jewish people. It was all because of those tears. So you never have an idea how far-reaching the power of tears can be. As a matter of fact, when it comes also to a hesped, you know, come to a hesped, another mechoshev passes away, leaves this world. So the Gemara tells us that hamayrid the moyes alodem kosher. Also, if somebody cries, he sheds some tears on the passing of an odem kosher. Someone's an odem kosher. Kodesh Baruch Hu seifranu menichon the beis genozov. The Gemara in Shabbos kofei. Kodesh Baruch Hu, the tears are so choshev. Kodesh Baruch Hu takes them and he puts them in his treasure house. It's as if Kodesh Baruch Hu has a safe, you know. Kodesh Baruch Hu has a safe. And he takes those tears, he puts it in the most special. When you have something very kosher, right? You lock it up. Kodesh Baruch Hu takes the tears that someone shed over an odem kosher, and he locks it up, the beis genozov. He locks it up, the beis genozov. Mashgiach asked, he says, Rav Nosson Vachtlug says, what do you mean he locks it up in his private safe, his private chambers? Are there any genozov in Shemaim over there? Who are you locking it up from? No, the expression is, when you lock something up, you show how important it is. It's an expression to show that how choshev the tears that someone sheds over an odem kosher, how choshev those tears are. It shows how close you come to Kodesh Baruch Hu through that way. Now it's a Kodesh Baruch Hu's private chamber. By the way, it says if somebody is moirid demoyis, he says al odem kosher. Many years ago, I heard a levai from Rabbi Yitzchak Singer, the Chayin Lavrocha, Rabbi Bialystok here. He said the following. He says kol moirid demoyis al odem kosher. So Rabbi Singer said, what do you mean an odem kosher? Call him kosher. A behemoth we know is either kosher or treifa. I know them is kosher. Everybody said I know them is kosher. What kind of thing is kosher? Call him oyer demoyes. I know them kosher. Kosher? Yeah, this food, yes, is it kosher? Is it not? Check it and see what the hechsher is. Yeah, that's kosher. It's not. What do you mean? Odom kosher. What does it mean? The loshna odom kosher. And he pointed out. He says odom kosher means as follows. If an animal becomes treif, the animal becomes treif. Or if you have a shaila, if an animal is treif or not, that there's a rule that treif and achai yud beis chodesh. An animal's treif cannot live 12 months. If an animal lives for 12 months, good chances that it's kosher. That, and in general, generally speaking, if an animal lives for 12 months, if an animal, let's say, right, if there's something happened and it has some sort of a defect, the animal has some sort of a defect, and you're not sure if it's treif or not, well, guess what? If the animal lives a year, What does it mean if it lives a year? What's the significance of a year? Is it 12 months? Because a year means all seasons. In a year you have cold, you have hot, right? You have in the middle. In other words, if someone is not really healthy, different seasons could have different effect. If an animal lives an entire year, it means that no matter what season it went through, it was able to withstand, right? It was able to withstand all types of different climates. You have to be healthy to be able to withstand all types of different climates. For an animal, that's significant of a year. Because in a year, you have different climates. You have all the seasons. Different seasons. Rabbi Singer said, in a person's life, you have also different seasons. Some seasons are good. He's matzliach. Shvuach gives him panosa. He gives him naches. And sometimes, you have sickness, chazur shalom, to deal with. You have nisyoinis sometimes with children, chinuch habonim. You could have nisyoinis in areas, health issues, panosa issues. If a person survives his erlichkeit in all seasons, that's called kosher. That means an odom kosher. In the same way by the animal. The animal is kosher, that's able to survive all the seasons. So to a yid, who is able to survive all the different seasons that come about, right? Because Bogot throws a lot of things in your way. Matter of fact, the yid asked once from Reb Chaim, Chaim Brisker, the particular yid was a gevir. Yid for many years, he was quite wealthy. And he was very much a Masliach, and a tremendous Baal Tzedakah also. Tremendous Baal Tzedakah. And by Hiyayim, the tables turned, and he lost all his money. He lost his money, and Mamishin, and now became an Oni. So when that's Reb Chaim, he said, why would Kodesh Baruch Hu do that to him? Why would Kodesh Baruch Hu do that to him? I mean, Kodesh Baruch Hu, right? Because everything Kodesh Baruch Hu gives you, really, is on loan. And Kodesh Baruch Hu tests to see how you're going to use it. So Kodesh Baruch Hu says to himself, oh, this is the person, right, I can entrust. If I want to give somebody money, Kodesh Baruch Hu says, this person's Kedai. Look, He's an honest shomer. He's an honest shomer. Right? In other words, he does gave him the money, but he's a shliach, right? That he should be able to distribute it and do with it the right thing. So this person, this gevir, actually he passed the test of utilizing his ashiris to the highest level, to the highest degree. As you say, he was a tremendous bal tzedakah, bal chesed. He did all the right things with his money. Did all the right things. And he lost his money. So they asked Chaim Brisker, now we don't understand, of course, the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but maybe a little bit explain to us, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu take away his money? What Rabbi Chaim answered? This is Rabbi Chaim. Rabbi Chaim said, this world is a university. And the university says, if you pass one course, you move on to the next course. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tested him with Ashiris, he passed. Now testing with Anias, there comes the next course. With poverty. It's another course! Okay, you passed the test of Ashiris. Okay, good. Let's see how you're going to do when things don't go exactly your way. It's another course in life. Let's see how you pass that course. This is the idea. This is the way it works. This is the notion. The Ein Eleia Rakos, Rabbi Yisai. What do we find? The eyes of Leah was tender. Why were her eyes Rakos? So what does the Zohar Kodesh tell us? Leah's eyes were Rakos, were tender from crying. Chazal saying Zohar Kodesh, Boi Urei Koyech HaTfilah B'moyis. Bidmois, come and see the power of tefillah, a power of tefillah with tears. Leah Meinu Yoda, Leah knew that she is destined to marry Esav. Why? She's the oldest. The oldest go to the oldest. Esav, Yaakov, Esav is the oldest. Leah is the oldest. So Leah is supposed to marry Esav, and Rachel goes to Yaakov. The youngest goes to the Yaakov. So Leah knew that. What did she do? Leah, nevertheless, she sat down and she was mispower with voice, she was mispower with tears. As the Pasuk says, Ve'ene Leah Rakos, her eyes were tender from crying, and she was matzliach to change Gzeirah. Because let's understand something. The fact that Leah was supposed to marry Esav, that was already predestined. What does the Gemara say when it comes to a Shidduch? Right? Mem Yoim Koidim Yetzirah Avlad, 40 days before the formation of Avlad. 40 days, you know how early Shidduchim are already prepared in Shemayim? They don't wait 18, 19, 20, 25, 27. Mem Yoim, 40 days before Yetzirah Avlad, there's an announcement, Bas Pleni Lepleni. Right? That's way before you were born. Way before you were born. Which means that it was announced before Leah was born, it was announced that Leah is going to marry Esav. That was an announcement in Shemayim. The power of tears was able to change that. That baskoil, that announcement that is being announced, Bas Pleni Lepleni, Mem Yoim Koyim Mitzirah Savlah, that was the Koyach. That's again, that's the Koyach. That's what the Zohar Kodesh says. Boy Reyes is Koyach Atfilah B'dmoyes. This is what happened. I'll tell you something, Pele de Gezach. He said, Chaim Shmulevich used to speak on the Yom Kippur. When is a greater day for Tefillah, for davening? And of course, you want to accomplish the most, hopefully on Yom Kippur. But that's the day. It's either now or never. It's Yom Kippur. Gemar chasim etoive, ksiva vachasim etoive, right? So hopefully you try to take out of Yom Kippur the most that you can. So Chaim Shalevich used to speak. This was his derech. Yom Kippur, we speak about the power. He says of davening. He says in the koich of demoyes, the koich of tears. He says by davening. And he pointed out to Gemara Bava Basra, a very fascinating Gemara. You realize that the mother of Shmuel Hanavi, Chana was the mother of Shmuel Hanavi. She was barren for many years. She didn't have children for a long time. She had a rival wife, Penina. The rival wife. Now there's two wives. You're allowed to marry two wives until Chaim Rabbeinu Gershon came along, right? Very common that Hank Avinu had four wives. Yeah. There was a pesan apikoyrus again, you know. The 20th century said, Yevlegayim b'derech uvis, Hank Avinu had four wives, Yevlochum t'yivab. So, Yevlochum t'yivab. What's the deal with the others did? And he had a few more of those. In any case, so Shmuel Hanavi was not born yet. Chana, trying to have a child, it doesn't work. Penina had a lot of children. It's not enough that you have a rival wife. You know, it hurts more. The rival wife is the one who has all the children. Not like Leah and Rachel, no? Leah had all the children, Rachel didn't have, until finally she had. So Chana didn't have any children. Penina had quite a few children, as we'll soon see, had quite a few children. So Penina wanted, you see, figure out a way of how to facilitate or how to encourage Chana to have children. What did she do? She figured, I got to figure out a way to make her cry. if Hannah's going to cry, Kodesh Baruch Hu is going to hear the cry, and he'll give her children. Because in the pasuk we see in the pasuk that Penina agitated Hannah. Penina agitated Hannah. So the Gemara says that Penina meant L'shem Shemayim. We'd not have known. Chazal wouldn't have told us. We'd not have known. What's L'shem Shemayim? She meant her toiva. She meant her toiva. So what did she do? She agitated her to cause her to cry, and she cried out of pain, cried out of tsar, and those cries penetrated the heavens, penetrated Shemayim, and she had children. So listen. The Gemara says that Penina was Messiah Chana, the Morb of Abasra Tezayim. Omer Aleph. Penina L'shem Shemayim Nischam. More that Penina was Mechavim L'shem Shemayim, that she was Messiah Chana L'shem Shemayim. In other words, Chazal are telling us clearly, Penina did not have any other kavanas. No personal kavanas. There's no side, strictly, no alternative kavana. Her intention was pure L'shem Shemayim. She was Messiah. She caused pain to Chana L'shem Shemayim. In order to make Chana cry out in pain, to have children. No. What did the Pasuk say at the end? We find that the Chana finally, when she was with child, and Hashem gave her, right, of course, she was the mother of Shmuel HaNovi. So Chana sang a shira, Ola Slibi Bashem. Chana began to sing a shira. And in that shira, know what she says? It's there in Pasuk Hey. Know what she says? The following. Look what she says. Akora Yolda Shiva. First say the Pasuk, I'll say the Pasuk and translate it. Listen to the Pasuk. It's an unbelievable Pasuk. Akora Yolda Shiva, Verabas Bonim Umlola. Listen to what Chana saying. A barren woman bear seven children. You hear that? She has seven children. She didn't have any children till now. Akora Yolda Shiva. A barren woman, ultimately, it's a whole thing about it. She had a Yeshua. A barren woman bears seven. The Rabbas Bonim Umalola. And the one with many children becomes bereft. Penina lost her children. Mind boggling. Penina was the one who had all the children. Chana didn't have anything. At the end, the tables turned. And what do Chazal say? What Chazal say? Every time that Chana gave birth to a child, Penina lost one. How does this happen? How does this happen? She meant L'shem Shemayim. It was a punishment for causing another person cry. It was a punishment for causing another person cry. In other words, it was the cry that being, in other words, tears are like fire. If I light somebody's house, L'shem Shemayim is still going to burn. Fire doesn't go by your intentions. Fire burns. If you drop a hatchet, right, even by accident, it's going to cut where it falls. If you cause somebody tears, it's fire. Tears is fire, and that fire burns. Penina got burned because of the tears of Chana. She met L'shem Shemayim. It's fire. Fire. Fire doesn't go with L'shem Shemayim. Fire burns because it's fire. Dima is fire. That's what Baruch Hanan Wasserman says. But sometimes we find one of the great Tanoim or Amaroim would say something inadvertently, didn't mean it. The Gemara says, Kishgoga Hayyotze, right? Kishgoga Hayyotze Medivra Hashalis, like a mistake, right? A blurt that blurted out, he says, from a great person. And he said, and somebody, as you say, he said something negative about somebody, that somebody should leave this world. He didn't really mean it that way, but it was blurted out. It happens. If a tzaddik says that it happened, the fact that he said it. Rabbi Cholin said, because the words of a tzaddik, he says, is like an axe. If an axe falls, even unintentionally, it's going to cut. The words of a tzaddik, he says, is like an axe. Kishgoga yoyse melifnei hashalot. Kishgoga yoyse. Tears are something, so now said Rabbi Chaim. Rabbi Chaim says, here's the koich of tears. Here's the koich of tears. So the Mashgiach would say, so Nosen Vachfogel would say, if tears have such an effect on the negative side, we always have a cloud, midot toiva, Meruba Mamidis Peronius, that the side of good is always stronger than the side of bad. And if tears, right, have such a power to cause punishment, imagine how much positive, right, tears on the positive side. When a person uses their eyes of tears, and he davens to Kodesh Baruch Hu, and pours out his heart, can imagine how much they can accomplish and how much they can achieve, and how it's able to break so many barriers. That is the koyach. And you might remember when you're saying Slichas, what do we say? We say Yirotzoin, we say Mufanecho Shoimeya Koil Bichiyois. Why are we saying kol bichir? It's kol tfiloseinu. Yiratzon shemeya kol. No, it's not enough kol tfiloseinu. There's something special. There's something added. There's an additional power. Shemeya kol bichiris. And we say to Kodesh Baruch Hu, shetosem dimoseinu. Take our tears, benoitcha, put it into your pouch. See the power. See our tears. See what's there. And let those tears, right, be able to achieve tremendous things. What things? Tzatzileinu kol gzeiros koshes v'achzorios. That's all again the power of tears. That is the power, we say. It's an interesting thing. It's brought down in the Shloach Kodesh. It's not always, you know, a person's in a mood of crying. Certainly, if Chas v'Shalom is some serious tzaras, yes, but we're talking about even any davening. There are tzaddikim, by the way, that just on a regular basis. They daven, it's just a natural thing for them. They cry to Kodesh Baruch Hu. But it's also koil b'chiyos. In other words, when you daven in a crying type of a voice, in other words, in a begging, in a pleading type of voice, that also has tremendous. Even if it's not actually crying, you don't actually have tears. But it's something about that the voice is a voice of a cry. So that's the type of voice that anybody can do. In a way, like in a pleading type of a way. And that's the in that we say also, that's called koil bichiyos, even just the koil sometimes of the bichiyah. The type of koil of bichiyah, which means that it's an emotional type. It's an emotional type of a feeling. Right? Then we say, oh, it's koil tfiloseinu. Sometimes the koil of tfiloseinu. And so on. So he used to say very much, there was a young man who basically, who had a room. Who had a room, I don't know if he was a boarder or not, he says, by the Mashgiach, by Ibnosen Wachtfeugel, he had a room there. And one night he says that the Mashgiach went to bed, but he broke out in a very, very strong, very, very strong cry. He broke out in a very strong cry. And the young man was concerned about the health of the Mashgiach, because thinks he's crying with such a power. So he wanted him to stop. He was afraid for the Mashgiach's health. The Mashgiach was crying with such power. How are you going to tell the Mashgiach, stop crying? So he figures, I'll say something that the Mashgiach is very sensitive to. He says, Rebbe, you cry so loud, I can't sleep. That last thing a Mashgiach has to hear, that he's staring somebody from sleep. Gezel Shinoi, all these things come into mind. This is against everything we stand for, right? To be very sensitive to somebody else's needs. So he says, Rebbe, he says, so he took it. He stopped crying. Next day in the morning, the Mashgiach says to the young man, if you would have allowed me to cry at night, it would have amounted to something. Look what happened. He said, I didn't. I just remained in the same madriga that I was, he says. That is the koyach. And I believe that that's the situation that we see right over here. That's what we find here in Orchis Chaim, that he is saying, Umitoscho bedimo tamse. Right? Umitoscho bedimo tamse. See to it that your bed should be soaked with tears. In other words, we see that this is the cheshivas. Then a person is able to poil anything. It's very interesting. You know, Rav Shamuel Fal Hirsch once explained it very well. He said, what's the definition of tears? How do you define tears? Nothing was scientifically. More than that. Much deeper. How do you define tears? He said, look. He says, if a person does physical exercise, you know what happens? The body begins to sweat. A person does physical exercise, the body begins to sweat. When the heart comes filled with emotion, the heart also sweats. The tears come out. That's tears. Tears are the sweat of the heart. This is how Rav Hirsch, this I did find. This is how your taicha with tears are. Physical exercise, right? That's the sweat of the body. Tears is the sweat of the heart. When the heart becomes really overworked, like emotionally, and a person really has the agosha, a person has that feeling, this, in fact, this is what happened. We're out of time, but let's take 2 minutes as we have the sheet. Until then, I can do it all. But let's take a look here, but just to do justice of Sabbath. Just at least, it shouldn't be Lamatola. All right, let's take a look. Let's see what we'll do over here. Okay, maybe we'll do over here. Look, number 5 on the left side here. Number 5 on the left side. Okay, we're talking about Yaskil Yom Hamise. But the Gemara talks about that one of the ways to combat the Yetzer, and that was the first words of the Rosh that we had in our Orchis Chaim, right? Where the Rosh said, Zachor Yom Hamavis Tomit, Yaskal Yom Hamise. Okay, so we have the Gemara, the quotes here, the Gemara, Loilam Yar Gizodam Yetzer Tov Al Yetzer Ha, a person should agitate the Yetzer Tov on top of the Yetzer Ha, but should always be busy fighting the Yetzer Ha. Not Zachor if he was successful, Mutav, if fine, if not, let him be Yosik B'Tayre. Try to work with Tayre, Tayre should be the tool. If it doesn't work, if it does work, fine. If not, chaymutev imlav yikra kriyashema. Right? If not Shchoimutiv, if it's fine, if it worked, Yimlav, if you were not successful, Yatskolo Yom HaMisa. Right? Yatskolo Yom HaMisa. So the question is, obviously, if Yom HaMisa definitely works, the question many before Shemak, the world of Chassidus also talk about this a lot, then why don't you do that first? Why give me first B'yosik B'Torah, which may or may not work, then you're telling me try Krishma, which may or may not work, right? And this is guaranteed, right? You tell me this is foolproof. Yom HaMisa seems to be the one. If the other two don't work, Yom HaMisa, if a person, right, is aware, there's going to come a time he's going to leave this world. If Yom HaMisa definitely works, so why shouldn't I try first the definite? Why try the maybes? Go right away. Go to the most powerful tool. Yom HaMisa. That's a question over here. Okay, skip the first paragraph. Bir Nifla. Go to the next one. Next is actually two lines, the next paragraph. Bir Nifla, Kosev HaGoyen Rabbi Yankiv Moshe HaKoyen Lesson. It's a simple called Moshe B'Torah. Misaprim, he says, it is said over, somebody once asked the Rishol Salanter, Kusha Cheres, they asked him, and that was, Ma'achar Shol Divrei Chazal, right? He listened to this question. Chazal say, right, that the Refuah Shol Haskoras Yom HaMisa Hivadoyis. From Chazal we say, right, that if a person is mindful of Yom HaMisa, that seems to be certain, that definitely works. Right? And it seems that Yaskir, as long as Yaskir, if a person just remembers it, right? That's what it seems. In Cain, note the question he asked. He asked, if Yaskalo Yom HaMisa, being aware of Yom HaMisa, it's foolproof against Yisra, how come the Chevra Kedisha, right, who they certainly see Misa every day, how come they're not so big tzaddikim, you know? People who work at Chevra Kedisha can be anybody. I'm not saying Chashom, there are some very... These people have a pretty big Yisra like anybody else. Why is it that the Yom HaMisa doesn't work for the Chevra Kedisha? Somebody answered Sol Salanter that question. He said, "In Cain, in other words, if Yom HaMisa, be right, and being mindful of Yom HaMisa is something that breaks your Yetzirah, in Cain, lefizeh ho-yistrichim ho-anoshim ho-oiskim b'kvuras meisim. Those people are oisik in kvuras meisim. They should be tzaddikim gemurim. Can they always have Yom HaMisa on their mind? They always have Yom HaMisa on their mind. Ma'achar shem chayim mamish b'mehus HaMisa. They live, right, with the mehus HaMisa. V'nimtzoyim tomid b'avirosa. They're always in the avir of Misa. And it's not just a zechira. They're oisik. They're mamish involved. Mamish, not a zechira. V'onoi Rabbi Yisrael b'kush acheres. Rabbi Yisrael answered, but I guess another question. He says, you know, those days, you know, the hearse, you know, it was not today, you had a limousine. You know what the hearse was? You had a wagon being pulled by horses. He says, when the horse pulled the hearse, when the horse pulled the wagon with the oroin into the base of kvaris, so the horses are now going to the base, are the horses doing tshuva? They see all the mesim over here. There it is, you can see all the mesim you want. A horse does not do tshuva. Mm-hmm. He says, people who are thinking like horses, he says, that is the perspective of life, can see all the mesim they want. He says, they will not do tshuva. Memele, so the answer is like this. Avada the Gemara says, Yaskolo Yom HaMisa is foolproof. When? If you started learning Torah first. Okay, the Torah didn't work, but you learned Torah. And then you learn Krishna. Then you say Krishna. The Krishna didn't yet do it for you. But with a Hagdom of Torah, now Yaskolo Yom HaMisa is meaningful. But without a Hagdom of Torah, without a Hagdom, it's like a horse going to base of course. What does it mean? Nothing. Has no effect at all. So you have to be pushed in the proper frame of mind that the Yaskalo Yom HaMisa should put you in perspective, and then Rabbi Yisai, we can be zoiche to do proper tshuva.